One of the country's biggest horse culls has just been completed in the north of Western Australia, where more than 7,000 Brumbies have been shot from helicopters because they're causing serious environmental damage. There's been limited public opposition to the cull, which begs the question, why is it okay to shoot 7,000 wild horses in an isolated area where the same decision would cause uproar in more heavily populated parts of the eastern states? To find out more about the cull at Lake Gregory in WA's north, we're joined by author Kim Mahood, who's written a book about the region called Desert Lake. It was published by CSIRO. Kim, welcome to Bush Telegraph. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Cameron. Hi.
What are the environmental reasons for a cull like this?
Well, first of all, you've got to understand the place itself, which is one of the most significant arid zone wetlands in the southern hemisphere. And partly it's so remote is why this isn't generally known. The horse issue has been around for a very long time. It is an Indigenous protected area and a pastoral lease, which is a complicated situation from the start. But back in 2000, when the scoping survey was done for the Indigenous protected area application, the horse issue was identified back then as, you know, potentially one of the biggest environmental issues. You've got that many horses on the grasslands around, you know, a big waterway. You're going to get a huge environmental impact.
And they're doing damage.
Of course, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What's the area actually look like, though? What do you see when you go there?
It depends which bit you go to, really. Yeah. I mean, southeast Kimberley, it's mostly pretty flat country. The lake itself is the terminus of Sturt Creek, so it sort of comes down through. You've got Spinifex country, you've got grasslands, and then, you know, it's actually blocked by the beginning of the Great Sandy Desert, these sort of ancient dune systems. So you have this amazing kind of inland sea at the top of the Great Sandy Desert.
So how come the horses have done so well there?
Well, the area was the sort of the end of the pastoral country. It was established, Bilowina itself was established around about the turn of, in about 1900. And the lake was central to the, it provided the grasslands and the water for the cattle. Over the next 70-odd years, horses were used initially for stock work. A very good line of horses was established, Arab and thoroughbred cross, so, you know, they are beautiful-looking horses. Then when the stations were purchased for the traditional owners, the Wamadjari, in 1978, from then on, the horse issue began to sort of develop, and by probably the 1990s, it was starting to get out of control.
And controlling the horses, I know, is critical to what happens with the future of this land and the pastoral lease.
We'll talk
about that in a moment. But the Aboriginal Land Trust were in charge of the cull, and our colleagues at the Country Hour, the ABC Country Hour in WA, spoke to the chair there. I'd be interested to hear what you think of what Clinton Wolfe had to say.
It's been a very emotional and complex issue. So when I got there, there's a number of people there that, I've got a relationship with in terms of, their family to me. And when they come up to me and they're distressed and saying, you need to help us and, it's ridiculous and we're trying to, get on top of this and, we're trying to get infrastructure in and, we build a fence one day and the next day it's not there because a herd of wild horses is running right through the middle of it. Yeah, you can see the distress in their eyes and they've had a connection, with these horses for 120 years. Now, sure, we want a few horses out here because we want to maintain that connection, but, you can't have 7,000 horses running around. And what was concerning them also is that when there was no water around, horses were coming into the community and, you've got 2-3-year-old kids walking around and, we're not saying, wild horse is aggressive or anything like that, but you've got a wild animal that, suddenly takes fright over, a vehicle going past and takes off and runs over the top of a child. I mean, is anybody going to turn around and say, we should put up with that? We want to have these stations up to scratch. So when the pastoral land sports come around, they say, no, you're not in breach anymore. Well done.
That's Clinton Wolfe, Chair of the Aboriginal Lands Trust in WA, speaking to our colleague Belinda Vereschetti. My guest is Kim Mahood, who's the author of a book called Desert Lake, published by the CSIRO, and we're discussing the extensive, the massive, really, Brumby cull that's taken place in the north of WA over the past week or so. Kim, why is the pastoral lease at risk if the horses aren't culled?
Okay, so they're 99-year leases. They're due to come up for renewal in 2015, which is now 2 years, no, not, well, it's just over a year away. And in about 2008, people came to me. I was working out there at the time. They'd been getting messages from the Pastoral Lands Board saying that the horses, if something wasn't done about them, then, you know, there was a risk of the leases being withdrawn, when they came up again. Mainly at that point, it was a pastoral issue that with that number of horses, it couldn't possibly be functioning effectively as a cattle station. At the same time, the Aboriginal Lands Trust were trying to divest the leases back to the traditional owners. So there's a complex, structure of management and so on. And that was when the traditional owners came to me and said, what does this imply? What it did imply was that they would then be left with the issue of dealing with the horses. So since that time, which is now 7 years ago, or 6 years ago, this has been ongoing, a discussion with the ALT, with the Pastoral Lands Trust, with the traditional owners, with the Indigenous Protected Area, Department of the Environment, all of those, DEC in WA, all of those groups have been attempting together to solve this problem. So I'm astonished and really, pleased that it's finally happened. Because without it, the Indigenous, the owners can't go anywhere. Nothing can happen in terms of their environmental sort of requirements to hold their Indigenous protected area, apart from the pastoral lease issue as well.
Okay. Look, we've said how it's happened in WA. It's control of wild horses in this fashion, aerial culling, is essentially off the table in Victoria, for instance, where it's a problem in the high country. But it's also carried out this type of control in the Northern Territory as well. So I want to talk more about why you think it's been able to take place in WA soon. But let's go across the border now into the Northern Territory where, well, they're no strangers, are they, to wild horse culls. On the phone is Alaric Fisher from the Government Department Land Resource Management. Alaric, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good morning, Cameron.
How bad's the feral horse problem in the Northern Territory?
Oh, well, it's patchily very bad. I mean, there's a lot of feral animals across the landscape. The landscape's suffering from a whole lot of ferals, horses amongst them, camels, donkeys, buffalo, feral cattle in some places. And on some properties, like we've just heard in WA, you get the horses are basically out of control through, lack of any systematic management. And so you get huge numbers, huge densities.
And so how does an aerial cull work in the Northern Territory? What's the process?
Well, look, we've had a lot of experience of aerial culls over the past few years, particularly through the management of feral camels. There's been a very large national program for managing feral camels, and we've taken those techniques and applied them to horses as well when we're asked to do so by the landowners. So there's some stringent standard operating procedures, but generally you'd have helicopters with certified shooters in them, usually a couple of helicopters, two or three helicopters operating together. They'd fly transects or over an area that was being managed. There's some requirements in terms of when they encounter animals. It's an absolute requirement that each animal shot twice, a minimum of twice. And then at the end of that line or at the end of the group of animals, they fly back over it to ensure that they're all dead.
So they have to... That's the reason for the two shots, to make sure that you...
That's right. And so there's a very stringent requirement there. And in the case of the camel program, for example, that's then often audited by a vet who comes along and inspects the... So the location of every shot animal is GPSed, and they're inspected subsequently by a vet, and the welfare outcomes are audited.
So the point is, though, you treat wild horses the same, in a management sense, you treat them the same as any other feral animal.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's exactly right. There's nothing special about horses in terms of a feral animal doing damage to the landscape.
Is it controversial, aerial culling in the Northern Territory?
Look, I mean there's always some controversy. The local controversy is usually around utility, whether we'd be better off, or whether the animals would be better off, mustered and sold or used for pet meat or the like. The controversy about animal welfare generally comes externally from usually from southern Australia or even internationally.
Why can't they be mustered or sold?
There's no bar to people doing that, and of course if they can do that economically, that's encouraged. But we're talking a landscape-scale problem, or an issue. And I think that's one of the problems people from elsewhere don't really have that perspective, that we're talking usually tens of thousands of animals over tens or even hundreds of thousands of square kilometres of often rugged and almost always inaccessible country. And, you know, you could manage small parts of that through mustering and pet meeting, but much of it you have to do by another technique. And aerial culling has been shown to be both, the science is very clear, I think, on this, both the most humane and the most cost-effective method.
Kim Mahood, you were nodding there when Alaric said the pressure, the opposition tends to come from the south of Australia.
Yes, although actually in up in at Lake Gregory, there's a very organised group based in Broome that activates an international sort of reaction. Mm. And that is what I think halted an attempted cull 3 years ago. So yes, there's this incredibly sentimental attachment to horses that isn't usually sort of exercised with other types of feral animals, I think.
And there's criticism of this latest cull. If you followed ABC News, you'd see the pictures that are out at the moment, and criticism that about 1% of the horses weren't killed in the fashion that Alaric described there.
Yeah. Look, you know, I guess when you've got that sort of number, you're going to have issues like that. But what I think isn't being put out is that it's probably just in time to avert another kind of animal welfare issue, which is that the lake is lower than it's been in, you know, 10 years. It's becoming very salty, which means the horses are either, you know, poisoned by the salts, or they move off to the handful of much smaller freshwater pools along Sturt Creek, and at which point, you know, they start getting bogged and perishing in the waterways or starving. So it was 40 degrees when I was out there in September. You know, temperatures in the summer are 50 plus consistently, and you get that sort of heat and evaporation with, you know, and a low wet season. So that's what was coming up, and I think that's one of the reasons probably that this cull did go ahead, was that it just circumvented a much worse situation.
Alaric, is the motivation for the cull in the Northern Territory sometimes the welfare of the wild horses as well, or is it predominantly for environmental reasons?
Look, that's certainly part of the issue, and just backing up what Kim said, I mean, we've got photos from the desert, some of these areas where we have done culls of, you know, desert water holes, which are an incredibly precious resource in that landscape, that are just packed to the brim with dead horses in dry times. So, yes, there's certainly a very serious animal welfare issue, but ultimately the thing we should be most concerned about is the impact of these animals on the landscape as a whole, and on every other species that uses that landscape, and the need to control them across that landscape.
Alaric, do you think aerial culling of horses is something that can or will ever be used in the southern and eastern states, where there is a higher human population that is concerned about this?
Oh, look, I hope so. I mean, I hope so, and I hope that some of the really solid scientific data that, for example, we've been able to collect through our work that actually gives figures for the humaneness, if you like, the animal welfare standards that you can achieve in terms of, for example, in the most recent horse cull that we did, that was supervised by vets, also flying in helicopters behind the shooters, that no animals were wounded and left alive, and that, you know, the time to death that they measured, the average time to death was something like 8 seconds. So, I'd like to read you out a sentence from the vet's report, which I think sums up the issue. While not aesthetically pleasing, the technique of helicopter shooting for feral horses allows a far shorter duration of suffering when compared to any other methods proposed to manage populations. So I think that's, you know, that's the balance. It doesn't look good, And so it's very easy for people to post photos on Facebook and to create a public reaction. But the science and the data supports that it's actually a very effective and humane and relatively humane approach.
Now, Kim, you grew up in the Kimberley but now live in Canberra, so you're familiar with the East and the West, the Northwest approach to the debate. How do you describe the differences?
Oh, look, I just think there's a much greater critical mass in the South that doesn't actually have any first-hand experience or connection to you know, land and the issues of environmental management. So you have that sort of very understandable emotional sentiment that is raised, and you just have the numbers down here. You know, I grew up in the bush. The numbers were always in the South, you know.
Yeah. So that's where a lot of the decisions end up being made, I guess.
That's right.
Yeah. Look, thank you for coming in today, Kim. Really nice to get your insights. Appreciate
thanks,
it.
Cameron.
Thanks a lot. Yeah. Kim Mahood, who's written a book called Desert Lake that was published by the CSIRO. And Alaric, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, very welcome, Cameron.
Alaric Fisher, Executive Director of Flora and Fauna at the Department of Land Resource Management in the Northern Territory. Now, in light of this cull in WA, we asked the Victorian Government for the latest on its plans to control wild horses in alpine areas. Now, it says aerial culls are not an option, but didn't want to be interviewed by Bush Telegraph. In a statement, the government says it's focusing on other control measures, including the live removal or rehoming of horses, and the euthanasia of captured horses in a controlled environment. Doesn't say exactly what the controlled environment constitutes. The RSPCA has accused the government of placing more importance on public perception than on animal welfare. It says, it's a quote, Parks Victoria, prematurely ruling out shooting will make it all the more difficult to now convince the public of the relative humaneness of it and have adverse welfare impacts on the horses themselves. If you've got a view, you can go to the Bush Telegraph Facebook page and share your thoughts with us there. You're listening to Bush Telly on RN.